All right, so this is one of the things that the counselor is saying, is that high school dropout is associated with negative individual and social consequences. Here's an example. Now, remember now, regardless of the reasons that we have already attributed to high school dropout and maybe our lack of sensitivity, compassion, empathy, etc., let's allow ourselves to have that reversed, to have our minds, our thought processes, our emotions, our feelings about this maybe taken in another direction. Listen, dropping out of high school consequences can lead to long-term economic hardships. And of course, these hardships can weaken health and they can weaken family functioning. As a rule, people with lesser education don't have as good a health care and, generally speaking, don't have as good a health as people with more education. Dropout is typically viewed as a result of long-held vulnerabilities such as learning problems. And can you imagine being angry at someone for having a learning problem that makes it difficult for them to thrive academically? Here's the thing. Little is known about the immediate circumstances that trigger high school dropout. Taking into account adolescent circumstances at the time of dropping out and comparing those circumstances with similar students who do not drop out could illuminate why dropout sometimes occurs in the absence of long-term vulnerabilities, or why vulnerable adolescents drop out at a specific point in time. This comparison might also help explain why only a fraction of vulnerable adolescents actually drop out. We're looking at vulnerability, the association between vulnerability and dropout. What is the vulnerability? How does it lead to dropout? And why is it that some adolescents who do experience this vulnerability still do not drop out? Well, the goal of this study was to examine whether recent exposure to stressful life events precipitate high school dropout over and above or in interaction with previous vulnerabilities. The authors used data from a case-control study of Canadian adolescents recruited from 12 disadvantaged public schools. The students were divided into three equal-sized groups. Those who had just dropped out of high school, they were referred to as dropouts. Students with a similar academic profile and family background as dropouts, they were considered matched at-risk students. And students with scores on the risk index that were close to their school's average, and they were considered to be average, not at-risk students. So let me give that to you again. The three groups, the three equal-sized groups, three groups of equal size. First group, those who had just dropped out of high school, and they were referred to as dropouts. Then, secondly, the students who had similar academic profiles and family backgrounds as the dropouts, and they were considered to be matched at-risk students. And then thirdly, students with scores on the risk index that were close to their school's average, and they were considered to be average, not at-risk students. After a recent dropout was identified and interviewed, a matched at-risk student was interviewed, as was an average, not at-risk student. During the interview, the students were asked about all the stressful situations that they had experienced in the past year. Their answers were then coded to identify the moment when these stresses occurred, as well as the severity of the stressors, from mild to severe. So here's an example. Mild stressors included not being selected for an extracurricular activity or minor arguments with parents. Minor arguments with parents, and that's why it was considered a mild stressor. Moderate stressors were life events such as a significant conflict with a teacher or peer bullying. Severe stressors included teenage pregnancy, placement in foster care, or rape. Teenage pregnancy, placement in foster care, or rape. The thing about foster care, very often, I'm not saying this is always the case, but very often when someone in the household is messing up, let's just say a parent, one of the parents is messing up in whatever way, and it's determined that having the children in the home with that parent may be a detriment to the well-being of the children or a child if there's only one child there. Sometimes, in fact, too often, the child is removed from the household rather than the parent who's causing the trouble. Sometimes, for example, it may be a situation wherein a single mother, a single mom, has three children, and maybe she has a boyfriend who lives with her or visits very, very, very frequently. And the boyfriend may at some point have injured one of her children. It's determined that that home environment is not safe for that child. And sometimes the child, in addition to being given medical care, will also be removed from the home and placed in foster care. Some of this just seems unfair. Some of it is unfair. Not necessarily the wisest solutions to some of these problems. But nevertheless, I want you to know that there are reasons, and very often, not the fault of the child who is placed in foster care, that have that child removed from the home and placed in foster care. Living with people he or she does not know very often. Sometimes living with kin, whether aunt, sister, aunt or great aunt, grandparents. Very often living with total strangers. Total strangers. Well, dropouts experienced significantly more stressful life events than the other groups of students, but only in the 3 months before dropout or before the interview. So follow what they're sharing with us here, because I think this is very important. This isn't just a matter of some children who were irresponsible and lazy and just decided, I don't want anything else to do with school. They had some very, very stressful life events that led to the decision to drop out. And more than likely, if their lives are like the lives of many of us, they were experiencing stressors before that major stressor life event that happened to serve as the final straw, or the straw that broke the camel's back. Nearly 20% of dropouts experienced a severe event in the 3 months before dropout, compared to 6% for matched at-risk students and 5% for average not-at-risk students in the 3 months before their interview. Exposure to at least one significant stressful event, whether severe or moderate, was 40% for dropouts in the 3 months before dropout, but only 18% for matched at-risk students and 17% for average not-at-risk students in the 3 months before interview. In multivariable analysis that accounted for underlying differences among the groups, adolescents exposed to severe stressors were over 3 times more likely to drop out in the following few months. Think about how difficult it is for us as adults, to cope with stressful events. Some people resort to drugs, some people resort to adultery. Self-destructive behaviors of one kind or another. Some of us handle those stressful events well. We're stressed, but we respond well. Same with teenagers. Some respond well. Some are so stressed that they respond by making bad decisions, one of which is to drop out of high school. The study clarifies the time frame during which stressors matter. Adolescents are at an increased risk of quitting in the few months following exposure to a severe stressor. relevant severe stressors were not confined to the school domain. In fact, most of the stressors that precipitated high school dropout occurred in other contexts and involved, for instance, family members, peers, work, health, or legal issues. So what did the findings show? Basically, that the risk of high school dropout is not predetermined by vulnerabilities such as learning difficulties or conduct problems. Rather, high school dropout is predetermined by things that fluctuate and become higher when adolescents have to deal with challenging situations in their lives. So school personnel need to be aware of their students' changing needs in and out of school to provide them with the right kind of support at the right time. And to achieve that goal, a number of approaches could prove helpful. What's coming to your mind as far as approaches that could prove helpful? Well, one could include the development of trusting relationships with teachers and the implementation of sensitive screening strategies. I know that there's a lot going on in this world. A lot going on in the schools. Teachers are inundated with work. And I know to add this to the mix would make life even busier for school personnel, particularly for teachers, counselors. We need to have our elected officials stop taking money out of our school systems and put more money into our school systems across the board so that we can have enough personnel to help meet the needs of our students. I'll be back in a few and we're going to talk empowerment. It's going to be having to do with a subject that is near and dear to my heart, diversity. It's also going to bring into the mix discussion of business. All right, so be ready for our empowerment note in just a few.